For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with our weekly look at the world of non-league football. And helping me focus once again on that look is our very own gaffer's gaffer. It's Mr. Dave Anson. Welcome back, Dave.
Good evening. How are you?
These weeks just keep coming round and round, and I've not even got any football to try and organise at the moment.
I think I'm going round and round. I'm going insane. I'm sort of, we're all locked down. I've been hitting golf balls up the field. I've been sort of going for walks, and I'll tell you what, you have to look for a positive somewhere. I'll tell you what I found really good is the coverage of the national games. And I've managed to watch a couple now. I end up, I watched the second half of Veasley and Wilston on Tuesday night, and the coverage was great. You know, it was really sort of clear. You know, I think there's a couple of issues in the first half which I didn't see that they were saying in their coverage. But very good. So I think that, I hope that sticks around after we all get out to go and watch. You know, just in case people can't make a game, then the technology and how to use it have definitely improved, you know.
Yeah, and it's going to be a fine line then, isn't it? When we are allowed back, and we will be allowed back at some point, as to how clubs encourage enough people to get along to the game, but also encourage those people that, as you say, there might be reasons where they can't get to the game, but you don't want to lose them as a fan.
No, I think the first thing you would say is that have it home fans only. So again, that's. So it saves people travelling in the COVID sort of climate. So away fans can tune in and watch like I did on Tuesday night. That's part one. The other part of it is that I think it was something like £7.99, so £8 to watch. And I'm guessing people will be annoyed at this, but I'm not sure how much it is, the India football match, because I've never paid. But I'm guessing it's about... It's about a tenner, is it, Tim?
I think that's a fair across step 3-4. Probably,
you know,
two and one slightly higher.
Yeah, so at least the club will be making income off people who can't get to the ground for whatever reason. So I do think that they are positives. Although I love away supporters in a ground because I think it just adds to the atmosphere. But I think when we come out of lockdown, it might be one of the stipulations that away fans can't travel, which I suppose we'd all have to accept.
Yeah, and interesting, we'll touch on this later on when I chat to Matt Badcock from the Non-League paper. The government have announced this sport winter survival package with non-league specifically mentioned, with money coming down to steps one and two and step three and six. But it is... It's all about major spectator sports, and there is something in me that suggests that maybe spectators aren't going to be allowed back into these levels of the game if there's going to be government funding in the form of loans. I think these are going to be coming into our level of the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to second guess what the government's going to say.
I think half the time the government are trying to second guess what the government are going to say. So I think that's.
Yeah, I appreciate how difficult a position they're in, you know, but it becomes frustrating all round. I'm sure they're frustrated with it as well. My little example, I was talking to my mates, obviously you know me and my golf, but I can meet one of my golf mates and go for a walk. We can actually go for a walk around our golf course. And if we want, we could carry our clubs and take our clubs out and have practice swings. We just can't hit a ball. And I don't get that. And I know they're in a difficult position. But that's one thing. Someone needs to look at it and go, well, surely they can do that. And I think the same with football. I think with non-league football at all levels, you know, even the national. The national limit the tickets. But listen, we're all using supermarkets. We're all, you know, we all know the 2-metre rule and queuing up to get through turnstiles. That's not hard to address. And when you're in the ground, you know, stay within your own space or your bubble. I think it's possible. I hope that people will look at it and work out a way to get some sort of normality back into our lives. And Well, our lives, Tim, as you know, football's a big part of that.
It's a very big part of that. And one of these, we've got the leagues announcing this week that, you know, if lockdown is released as planned and depending on other government restrictions, they're all looking to start back up before Christmas and get those fixtures back underway. And there's suggestions that maybe the FA Trophy will be that the first round of the FA Trophy that needs to be played of this season will be that first weekend back, maybe, or maybe the first midweek back following that. So the first week of December, second week of December. But we still got what I see is probably the easiest game to maybe use as a test scenario, which is last year's FA Trophy final and FA Vars.
Yes, yeah, we've spoken about it a few times now. I do think that with the, and even to the point of allowing people in to watch it, Wembley's a big stadium. You can certainly, the amount of people that the finals would get, they could accommodate comfortably in a COVID safe, I think it's called, in a COVID safe scenario. So I would think yes, and as much as I've said before, it's funny. It's not funny. It's ironic that I still hold the vase of your leg as a Chertsey manager. It, how can you be playing the next year's competition when you haven't played the final of last year's? Or I don't even know what year we're in anymore. But do you know what I mean? I just think that would make sense for me for the FA to go, okay, we're coming out of lockdown on this date, but we were definitely going to have a finals day on this date, and we're going to do it.
Well, interestingly, there's a concert planned at Wembley Arena right next door before Christmas, which will be broadcast and streamed, but also allowing a number of people into the arena. Now, the arena's an enclosed space. Wembley Stadium's an outdoor space. You'd think that maybe, you know, non-league finals day from last season could be a great test event for them to put on at Wembley Stadium.
Yes, and I think that's, yeah, you would hope so. And I know that, listen, everybody in non-league has, I think, have done well in kicking up a fuss and making their point to the FA. We just, you know, in the leagues, we just wait to hear what the government are giving them as guidelines, you know. But it's incredibly frustrating, you know, listen. Life's incredibly frustrating at the minute for a lot of people. So we keep our fingers crossed, mate, and we try and stay positive that we can all get out for, well, certainly for at least Christmas, you know.
Now, we've spoken to many managers and chairmen over recent weeks about the new normal in non-league football and what that means. But I've also been very conscious that we've not yet had a player's viewpoint. So a perfect time to speak this week to a man, well, his career I've certainly followed closely on this show, and who this week grabbed another important goal, watched probably by a more global audience than usual. It's a warm welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Wrexham's Elliot Durrell.
Thanks for having me, guys. Nice to be on.
Well, it's always good to have you on. It's great to get you back on the show. There are so many angles here. I now almost feel your pain when you're in front of goal. I mean, let's start with the football this week. A fantastic midweek 1-0 win at Hartlepool United. A clean sheet and your first goal back at the club. A pretty decent one as well. If anybody hasn't seen it on Twitter, do go and check this goal out. I'd imagine you've got a fairly big grin on your face this week since that.
Yeah, it was a nice goal, like you say, to sort of score your first goal back at a club that you've been at before, you know, and to coincide with going to a tough place like Hartlepool away on a Tuesday night is, you know, it was brilliant, and it was a well worked goal as well, and thankfully, you know, that one gone in the top corner, so it was nice to see it go in.
Yeah, I haven't watched the full game, so I trust there weren't a couple more that didn't quite tee up and end up in the top of the net.
Yeah, there was a few. We had a few. I had a few sighters in the first half, and to be fair, they you know, they shook bodies on the line, and they defended very resilient at times. To be fair to Hartlepool, and like I say, thankfully, you know, I got half a yard in the second half and managed to find the top corner.
And now, I'm not sure if it was the first time you were on this show, but I do recall, and Dave thinks I'm quite sad that I remember this, but I do recall having you on the Non-League Football Show back in February, I think 2014. You just signed for Wrexham the first time around then, and your first full-time pro contract, I think. That was nearly 7 years ago, and both you and the club have had, well, immense journeys since then. Yeah, various things have changed. You're about to embark on another one as well. You've been the focus of TV before with the Jamie Vardy Sky documentary, but did you ever expect to be playing for Hollywood superstars?
No, not for one minute. You know, I mean, what's obviously happened and gone on this year in terms of, you know, the global pandemic that's gone on. I think you have to realise that so many things can happen nowadays. But I mean, I never dreamt for one minute that anything like this would happen, and I don't think anybody at the club, you know, would have either. So it's like you say, the spotlight that the club is under now is absolutely incredible. And you know, what a time to be part of Wrexham Football Club.
Yeah, it has brought the attention of many beyond non-league. Yeah, they now know what non-league's about. You know, Ryan Reynolds and McElhenney, they gave the green, given the green light this week for the takeover of Wrexham, move it out of supporter owned, and they posted a tongue in cheek sort of plug video type thing, plugging the non-league the sponsors of the club, which are the Eiffel Williams trailers. Now,
yeah,
I understand that's video has now been watched by maybe 5 million people. That shows the spotlight you're in.
Absolutely, you know, it really is quite incredible the obviously the audience that it reaches, and you know, like you say, when it comes from two global superstars like that, you know, the response that you get is superb, and like you say, I think it's touched probably 5 million views in probably 72 hours, which, you know, for the club and for the whole town is absolutely incredible. And like I say, there probably isn't a better club to be at in terms of, you know, with the future being so bright.
Yeah, and that takeover is surely set to become another documentary, I would have thought, along the lines of All or Nothing or Sunderland Till I Die, one of those. But you're a bit of an old hand at that. Will you be there to offer the lads some tips on how to keep focus on the football stuff?
Yeah, like you say, I've had a brief TV appearance before on the V9 Academy, so you know, I'm not too shy in front of the cameras. but no, it's you know, it's going to be great. I think, you know, a lot of the lads have probably watched you know, Man City, you know, the All or Nothing one, and possibly the Leeds and, you know, the Sunderland one, and so, you know, for us now to potentially be the focus of one of those, it's going to be special.
And Elliot, you know, just on the football side of it, you know, it's you know, with the lockdown situation, you yourselves were sort of had to self isolate in sort of October time and sort of train on your own, and then you get back, then the Weymouth of the sort of postponement there. How hard has that been to keep the sort of togetherness, and how have you dealt with that, training on your own, or has there been Zoom meetings? Talk us through a little bit of that from a player's perspective.
Yeah, so it's been strange. You know, it's obviously what we've tried to maintain, you know, the whole time is to sort of concentrate and control what we can control. You know, and in terms of the pandemic and the lockdowns and things like that, you know, that's not something that we've been in control of, but, you know, we're fully in control of what we're able to do. You know, if we do have to go into self-isolation, and, you know, we were forever on, you know, fitness and running apps to check in, and, you know, we were all given a plan that we had to stick to. And like I say, you know, the manager and the staff obviously have to put their trust in you then to stick to that. Mm. You know, and obviously it's vitally important for us as a group of players, and, you know, for where this group of players want to take this club, it was it's vitally important that you stick to that. And as I say, we came back last Monday with a view to playing Weymouth away on the Saturday, and then obviously, you know, they came down with it, so that sort of set us back a little bit more, which was frustrating. But you know, you, like I say, in a year of so much uncertainty, you just have to control what you can control. And thankfully, we stuck in there, and we got a win in our first game after the, you know, the self isolation, which was an important thing to do.
I get that. I'm just thinking about the, you know, the finer details of your art. You know, I mean, we can all go running. Me and Tim can't go run anymore. We're too old for that. But so I understand the fitness part of it and the responsibility you have for your teammates, which brings you all down that road together. But when you're a centre forward, finishing's something that needs practice. You need to have your touch right. You need to play with the confidence and not sort of be trying to find it, for want of a better description. How's that part of it been?
I mean, that side of things has obviously been tougher than like you say, the fitness side of things. But, you know, I mean, you work hard all your career to sort of make sure that those things don't ever get too far away, if you like. You know, that whether that be 15, 20 minutes after training every single day, you know, so that if you are unfortunate enough to have a break for whatever reason, then, you know, you're not going to come back and you're a million miles away. But like you say, you know, when you have to self-isolate, I was in the back garden with my little boy as much as I can. And, you know, I know it's nothing like what I would be used to. It's still, ultimately, I've got the ball at my feet, and you know, I was teaching him how to do it. So
Shall I be tracking him now instead of you then?
Yeah, but to be fair, that's exactly what I meant. That's what people sort of wouldn't understand, because you have to do that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the more you do it, the more you do it, the easier it becomes. And like I say, even if it is in the back garden, with your children or whatever, you know, it's all gonna help the cause. And like I say, thankfully, I've got a little boy who's football crazy. So you know, he doesn't let me not go out in the garden with him at many opportunities. So.
So these are the things that happen over 7 years from when you start out on this show, and then your world changes, but for the better, of course. Now, I'd imagine that first session back, though, was a bit like releasing a bunch of Yorkshire Terriers into a small room, or a bunch of puppies. Lots of energy, but maybe needed to be a bit directed, because as soon as you get together, obviously everybody, you know, wants to get back to the level they were at.
Yeah, and it was, you know, you probably hit the nail on the head there. We were like a group of terriers, and we were just all full of energy and buzzing around. And, you know, we were probably, I think there was a couple of words said in the first session back, if I'm being brutally honest. And I think that was a build up of, like you say, frustration, and, you know, the fact that we've stop start sort of thing. And then, you know, like you say, when you then go back together as a group, everybody just wants to hit the ground running. And, you know, when it's not at the standard and at the levels that it was prior to the break, it becomes even more frustrating. So, like you say, it's important that you get back to the levels that you were at, or that, you know, that you've set as a group, as quick as possible. And like I said, following that up with a victory away on Tuesday night was vital.
And that must help you as well, right? Because you feed off, and centre forwards are all similar. They confidence is a massive thing, and for you to go and score the winner in your first game, you know, as Tim says, big smile on your face, and it takes you into the next game, you know, full of confidence to try and go and do the same thing again, I take it. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. You know, there isn't anything, you know, anything like scoring a goal. You know, you have to celebrate every goal as if it's going to be your last. You know, it's a big thing to score a goal, and you know, it's an art to do it. So it was great on a personal level, and you know, in terms of as we mentioned, the fact that it was the first game after the enforced break that we had to endure, it was important that we got that. But like you say, the confidence you can take out of scoring any goal is huge, and you know, I'll be looking to take that certainly into the next game and hopefully beyond that.
And I guess the thing now is you've had, well, a week that probably if you went to a Hollywood scriptwriter and said, right, this is what we're going to do in this week, and they go, yeah, that's not going to happen, because it's, you know, you've got that win, the first time you've been back, you've then got all this media coverage. And how does Dean Keats and the rest of the backroom staff now keep you focused on the football going forward?
You know, I think they've done an incredible job up to now. You know, we've sort of, you know, it's probably been out in the public now for probably 4 or 5 weeks. You know, and the gaffer's constantly said, look, we can only control what we control. We can't control anything off the pitch, anything, you know, that happens at the club. We have to just take care of things on the pitch. And you know, as global as it is, you know, and how big the spotlight is, it's ultimately we have to make sure that we match the, you know, all the excitement off the field with results on it. And you know, that's obviously going to be a huge thing to do this season. And you know, we set our targets at the beginning of the season, and like I say, with all the added sort of pressures and spotlight that we're under at the moment, it's massive that we do that. So we've just got to stay focused and you know, make sure that we hit the targets that we set.
Yeah, and obviously, previously a fan-owned club, moving into private ownership with the new owners, but the fans are a massive part of Wrexham, and this is your second time at the club. You know that, and obviously they can't be at the games at the moment. How is that for a club that is so, there's very few clubs where the fans are so much part of the football club.
Absolutely, you know, the fans at Wrexham are, you know, they're frightening, really, for the level that, you know, we're at. They're incredible, the support that they give you. You know, there's a lot of pressure that comes with it, you know, with having such a big fan base, and you know, there's a lot of expectations. And I think that because of the last however many years they've been at this level, you know, they're obviously becoming even more frustrated at being at this level. And you know, all the players understand that, and you know, we all feel the frustration. But you know, now in terms of what's happened or what's happening with the takeover, you know, it's exciting times, and you know, it's probably not going to be as simple and as straightforward as what some fans will think, you know, because it never is. But you know, like I said, it's an exciting time to be a Wrexham fan, and you know, there's plenty of them, and we just look forward to getting them back in the ground as soon as we can, because you know, ultimately they're a huge part of the club. And even though, you know, in the next couple of weeks they might not own the club like they did, you know, they're still a huge part of the football club and you know, the community. And as I say, we're just counting down the days that we can get them back inside the racecourse and you know, make them be that 12th man again.
Dave, did you have another question or?
No, I'm just sitting back and
yeah, you're just enjoying Elliot. Yeah, I think we'll have to get him on every week, actually, because you've almost said everything that I'd hoped you would say, because we know the pressure that Wrexham players have been under and for years, and it has been an enlightening story, both for non-league and for the club, and we hope it does continue. And as you say, there will be hurdles and it won't be as straightforward as everybody would like to think. That maybe the Hollywood remake of the documentary may be, but hopefully you'll be a star in that as well, Elliot. But thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show and giving us an important player's perspective on how it is at the moment. And you know, we know that you're one of the lucky ones to enjoy football, but it's good to get you on the show. And we look forward to talking to you again very soon.
No problem. Thanks, gents. Thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Cheers. Cheers, mate.
Right, so let's stay with the National League then, and let's go out to our next guest. Again, no stranger to this show. When we last spoke with him, I think he was still in the hunt for a new project while he watched from the non-league wilderness. Back in the summer, he found, a new project, really. He's found it a tough start in the National League with his new club and has led them to the FA Cup second round alongside that. It's a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Barnet manager Peter Beadle.
Good evening, chaps.
Peter, it's good to have you back on. As I mentioned, you were looking for a project last time we spoke. What was the big sell from Barnet?
I just think because of exactly what it is, it's a huge project, and I think that it's underachieving as a football club. I think that, you know, with the facilities we've got here and the ground that we've got here and everything else that goes with it, we want to be a league club as soon as possible. So the project here is to try and get them into that division as soon as possible.
I mentioned the tough start. It's very early days in the embryonic table and that. But have you been able to stamp your own mark on the squad so far? Or is it still too early days for that as well?
No, we have done. I mean, like I said, it has been a project because, you know, when we came in, quite late on. We only had sort of had about 3.5-4 weeks to prepare before the season started. We only had 7 senior players and 5 younger players in the group. So we had to recruit and try and recruit as best we can. And obviously in these difficult times, it's been tough. So the group has huge potential, like the football club does. And we're a work in progress so far. I mean, we've shown that, you know, over the sort of first 5-6 games of the season that we're capable of. But unfortunately, we've just hit a little bit of a speed bump. And sometimes that happens when you're a new group and you're just trying to feel your way through it a little bit. But like I said, I thought we thoroughly deserved our win against Burton in the last round of the FA Cup. And we've just come off it a little bit since then. So it has been a difficult start, but no excuses. I mean, it's been, you know, we've got players that are certainly capable of playing at this level, and some that we've signed that have played in the league. So, you know, so we're fully prepared for, you know, for what the league brings. We just got to do it on a more consistent basis now.
And I suppose as well, Peter, that with football basically locked down underneath the conference, you know, for scouting and situations like that, where you are looking to add someone into your group, like a squad player to sort of work on him and make him a little bit better. It's very difficult to see anything at the minute, isn't it?
Yeah, it has been really tough. I mean, obviously, step three, and these are the strange things about it. Obviously, step three and below were open. They were allowing crowds in. I mean, I went to watch Hendon versus Brentford B in a cup final, a London Cup final, and there were 600 fans there, 600 supporters at the game. So, but obviously in this new wave of lockdown, obviously it's made things a little bit more difficult. And you start to wonder why we've got all these fantastic National League grounds, you know, the likes of the Stockports and the Wrexhams and Chesterfields and the Barnets, and, you know, no respect to any of the others who I've missed out, but there's loads of them in that division that are more than capable to, you know, to socially distance and to have people come in. Yet for our level, we couldn't have fans in. So it has been difficult. And then obviously everyone's put a block on, you know, people coming to games and, you know, letting scouts come in. And it's just made it hugely difficult to recruit full stop. And, you know, we thought that this year with, you know, maybe even so with the saturation of players being released from the Football League, that we would be able to recruit, not easy, because it's always tough because you're fighting with everybody else. But, you know, there's been so many players that we've spoken to that want to stay in the Football League. And at the moment, they still aren't. They haven't got clubs at the moment, but they're still hanging on and waiting. So it's been difficult all around. I mean, for everybody involved in life and in football, it's been hugely difficult.
Yeah, and that would sort of, you know, listen, taking over a new club, you know, when you did, you know, you're a little bit late to the race, then you get the lockdowns, then you get, you know, it all adds up to like not the easiest start for any manager, never mind yourself.
No.
But how do you adjust where you are with it, Peter? Now, you know, listen, we're only 6, 7, 8 games in, and it's no big deal. It's always a big deal. But have you taken that into account that, you know, really you've been put in a position that in normal circumstances you'd have been able to do a little bit more with it than you can do at the moment?
We have done even more so this year, Dave, because when we had a mini pandemic within the club. I mean, 8 of the players went down with COVID, and I did. So with the way it worked out, we had one player who after the game on the Tuesday reported feeling not well on the Wednesday. Then we found out that his test was positive on the Friday, but then we found out that two players had travelled to the game with him on the Saturday. So then they were tested, and they were both positive. And then everybody was tested on the Tuesday the following week. So we've had a sort of, it's been, like I said, it's been a really, really tough start. But like I said, again, no excuses, because we've put teams out there that we feel can do the job. And but it's been difficult in the fact that we've had so few games, and we're now going into the middle of November or end of November now. We're going to the end of November. We've had very few games. But we haven't been able to put out the same group of 11, which has also been very difficult, because, you know, before, you know, you'd like to go with a little bit more consistency to give the players a bit more chance to get to know one another. I mean, we had 4 pre-season friendlies before we started. And then obviously we've got into the games. And again, even going into the games, we still haven't really got a full squad. We're still 1 or 2 short. So, you know, but we are getting there, and like I said, with the quality of players we've brought in, but it has been tough. So we've not been able to select the same 11 twice. We've already had an ACL injury this season, so he's unfortunately out for the season now. So, you know, we've got to maybe try and replace him if we can. So it's been tough, difficult, but again, nothing surprises you in football anymore. So
no,
you know, you just got to get on with it and roll your sleeves up, and you just got to work harder every day, and that's what we do. And we speak to the group, and you know, like I said, Sunday against Burton last week, we were brilliant, fantastic. The commitment and the effort and the character the players showed was spot on, second to none, especially going down to 10 men before half time. Mm. And then the last couple of games, we've just not quite been at it a little bit. So. And like I said to them, it's not because you're bad players. It's just because we, you know, for whatever reason, we've just come off it a little bit. So check it on the training ground and work twice as hard. And then, you know, the results will come from that.
Yeah. And you can, and to be fair, Tim, you can, when you have a big result in the FA Cup, as an example, there sometimes is a little hangover after it. You know, that can be quite a natural thing. But with everything else, Peter, you know, well, one, you say that you're not making excuses. We understand that. We're asking you questions that you're giving very good answers to. And I feel as well that you address it the way you do, because experience is massive in these situations where, you know, as you say, nothing surprises you. It's because you've seen most of everything.
Yeah.
So I think that's a massive thing for the football club. But when you're in a new job and obviously, you know, there's no fans in, but you are dealing with your board and the chairman. They're okay. They know the situation, the difficulty that you're going through at the moment, because that's a relationship that has to be right as well.
Oh, of course. And Dave, I mean, as you know, I mean, the chairman here, he knows his stuff, he knows his football, and he's been hugely supportive of what we've tried to do. You know, and he has seen for me the improvements within the group every week. You know, and he's fully supportive of what we're trying to do. So, and, you know, spoke to him again today, spoke to him yesterday, spoke to him on Tuesday after the game, which was a disappointing result for us at home. But, you know, but he's right there. He's been hugely supportive in what we're trying to do. So, you know, so like I said, and it's, yeah, I think that, you know, the chairman's been in the game a long, long time, you know, probably longer than most chairmen. He's been here an awful long time. So, you know, so he understands, and he knows, of course he knows what's going on and what's what. So, but like I said, it's just, like you said, obviously you want to, you know, as you know, Dave, when you go into a new club, you want to hit the ground running.
Yeah.
But circumstances haven't done that. So it's a case of other way. You know, you roll your sleeves up when you get in there and you work the players every day. And, you know, but yeah, you know, you graft them and you work them and you organise them, and then it's up to them again when they cross that white line.
Yeah, and just with the group now, outside of the ACL, have you got a clean bill of health now, Peter? You're looking to where you're a little bit more stable and can maybe play the same team twice?
No, not. I mean, again, it's, you know, like, so so we had the Burton game and then Bromley on Saturday. We had six out and then two came back. So we brought two back and then we still got four out. And so we're not quite there. And that's, again, that's par for the course. It's, yeah. Every team throughout the year has their injury problems. But obviously for us, we would have preferred it to have been maybe mid-season, end of season, when we had some momentum and we had, you know, we had the opportunity to come in and hit the ground running. But, you know, we've done that to a degree, and we've brought in lots of new players. And they are, you know, for me, I've got total faith in them and what they could achieve. We just, like I said, we just need to have that consistency, which is not only about form, but also about having the players on the training ground, as many of them as we can do. And like I said, we've got the ACL. We've also got three or four still out. And they've been out probably a couple of weeks now. One of them's been out 5 weeks. One of them's been out 4 weeks. So, like I said, and they are a big miss because we don't have a huge squad, but we have a very competitive squad when everybody's fit. So we're still missing one or two, but we're making do and we're getting on with it. That's what we can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've mentioned, you know, you beat Burton in the last round. You've got that second round tie, another home one against MK Dons on the TV as well. And they're the sort of games that can really lift the spirits of the club as well.
Well, this is it. I mean, obviously, we thought after we were on a fantastic run of games. I think we'd won three or four and drawn one of our last sort of four or five going into sort of coming up with Burton, and then obviously beating Burton was a massive thing for us. And then we thought we were going to kick on from there, and since then we've played two at home and lost two at home and not been particularly good. So, you know, so like I said, so I'm hoping that we can turn it around this weekend and start gaining a little bit of momentum and form again before we go into that cup game in 2 weeks' time or two Saturdays' time.
And I guess from everything you've told us, all the stress and everything like that, I'd imagine you've still got to deal with quite a lengthy commute as well from where home is. But I sense you're pleased to be back in football.
It's what I know best. It's what I love. It's, you know, it's just, it's been part of, it's been all my life, even, you know, my kids and stuff like that. And, you know, so I'm very thankful for the support I have from my family, and obviously from her indoors. She's been great in supporting this, obviously, because we do stay down a couple of times a week. But again, this was an opportunity that I couldn't turn down, and speaking to the chairman and the ideas that he has for the future and going forward, who wouldn't want to be part of it? And like I said, it wasn't a case of just taking the first job that came along. You want to have something you can work with and a real project to get your teeth into. And this is certainly going to be that. And I'm, you know, just loving every minute of it.
Well, you were certainly the patient man at the bus stop while you were waiting to get back in football. And hopefully is the final destination's right. Yeah, Peter, it's always good to get you on the Non-League Football Show.
No problem at all. Pleasure, gents.
Wish you well at the weekend and in that FA Cup tie in a couple of weekends' time. And we'll speak to you again very soon.
Hopefully. Thanks, Tim. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, good luck, Peter.
Thanks, Dave.
So let's round up the rest of the week's non-league news. It's back on over to the non-league paper towers, and a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show to Editor-at-Large, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good for a week. The week seems to be whistling past as ever, and we're trying to catch up. We're speaking on Thursday evening, when we speak on the back of a government announcement, the Sport Winter Survival Package, with non-league specifically mentioned. And it all sounds good. It's a wonderful fanfare, and it looks like there's going to be some money available for non-league at steps 1 to 2, and then steps 3 to 6.
Yeah, I think it's great news, as you say. Obviously, the National League clubs have had some money through the National Lottery funding, and this is extra on top of that, 11 million. And then looking at National League steps three, non-league steps 3 to 6, 14 million to kind of be shared out is is brilliant news. It's what clubs have kind of been asking for, particularly steps through to six for a while, haven't they? Even though they've been allowed crowds in, obviously they're paused at the moment, but even though they've been allowed crowds in, it's kind of not making up for that shortfall for a lot of them. So it's just some much welcome extra money coming down that is very much needed, and I'm sure clubs are going to be very, very grateful for it.
Yeah, it is wonderful news, but as ever, it must be the old lawyer in me. The finer points aren't there yet. We don't actually know, and I'm always a bit cautious to celebrate too much until I know exactly what this all pertains to. One of the things that concerns me, I think, most is that this money is not only money coming to football. There's money to rugby league. There's money to rugby union, basketball. I know swimming lost out because this money is being handed out or made available by the government to major spectator sports. And it concerns me that maybe suggests that fans aren't going to be allowed back in even at steps three to six when things do get back underway.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of this, as we've been all through this process, is never quite knowing exactly what's going to be, what's going to happen from one day to the next. You saw how quickly everything got shut down at the beginning of the month, and it's kind of it's trying to sort of read between the lines a little bit, isn't it? Mm. Just read, spot the sort of clues that are coming out of government all the time. Sort of on the FA website, they've kind of sort of welcomed the announcement, and they've said themselves, we await further details of the eligibility application process timelines from Sport England, and it's kind of still all trying to work out exactly what it's going to be. It says it's largely going to be comprised of loans and low cost loans, so low interest loans. It is, as you say, the fine details, and are fans going to be allowed back in immediately? I mean, we just don't know, but we're still hearing this kind of, Christmas and having a little pause at Christmas and lockdowns in January and all this kind of thing. That doesn't sort of sound particularly conducive to having crowds back in football stadiums. And are they going to allow crowds back in venues and anywhere at all before Christmas, when that is going to be kind of the wider public's focus at the moment, is going to be what can we do, what can't we do at Christmas, and how well is it going to go down if they just sort of open all the gates and let everyone pile out at the beginning of December, and that jeopardises people's Christmases. That's sort of the concern that I would have as well. Mm.
Yeah, and we've spoken to Peter Beadle at Barnet earlier on in the show, and he mentioned going to, I think it was Hendon, Brentford B, a London Cup final earlier on in the season, where there were 600 people within the ground there, and he was mentioning, clubs in the National League where they've got bigger grounds and that they've got an easier way of accepting larger crowds in that aren't being allowed. And you just think that... I'm just concerned that non-league doesn't get hung out to dry if it allows too many people in at football. As you say, the first thing that they're allowed to do, they rush out and go and watch football. It'd be fantastic in normal circumstances if we were effectively holding people back from coming in, but it might be the wrong circumstances. And you did mention there as well that this money that's being handed out by the government, it is actually going to be largely composed of loans. And then that always concerns me as well as to, is there going to be an eligibility criteria on that? And we're talking about clubs struggling to survive at the moment because they haven't got people coming through their doors. But are they going to be able to then finance these loans next season when crowds hopefully will be allowed back in? And if there's... the pandemic's in a different strand, or we're allowed people back, and there's a more normality where clubs have got revenue streams. But are those revenue streams going to be enough to sustain the loans that they're going to have to take out to get through to the end of the season?
Yeah, it's just so many questions, isn't there? And just going back to sort of on the crowd, and someone sort of said to me a while ago, yes, we might, as sort of people in non-league, we might see it as only 400 people in a ground and 300 people here or 600 people there in a big ground, but kind of to the wider public, that is still people inside football stadiums, and it's kind of getting that the people who are going to make these decisions are going to be balancing that up against sort of wider public perception and opinion. So, well, we sort of know what clubs have been doing. I think that's the frustration for everybody, isn't it? Is it all the money that kind of spent out and all the kind of work that's been undertaken to kind of get grounds COVID secure, and then bang, it comes along and we get shut again. Obviously, National League haven't even been open their grounds, but it is all these kind of these questions that just kind of float around, and it's difficult to get any real sort of clarity on. And it's the same as you say with this, with the money. You know, what are the sort of the strings that are attached to it? But I think sort of overall, it does seem to be it must be positive news that there is going to be some money there and kind of available to clubs. Just quite how that's going to be is the question. And it also shows how kind of big this issue is. And you look at, like you say, across all those kind of sports that are have been sort of desperate for this funding and help. It just shows how kind of big the problem is across the country in football. Although it is, you know, everything we love and is a very big piece of the pie and the sporting culture in this country, there are, you know, a myriad of other sports and competitions that have also been massively affected by this. You say about rugby. I mean, you know, we have a rugby paper in our office, and they've had basically half their seasons have been cancelled that they cover. You know, it's sort of a complete wipeout of community rugby. Now, what shape that takes on in the new year, if there's kind of some sort of slightly different tournaments and competitions, that's still to be seen. But you know, it's kind of, football's done really, really well to get some of the games, a lot of the games on that it has so far with crowds. And that's real testament to the clubs, and it just shows the kind of the strength of non-league football and what people will do to make sure that they were able to get games on. But again, it's back into this kind of no man's land of kind of quite what's going to happen. It's sort of all up in the air again, aren't we?
It is all up in the air, and you know, I wouldn't want to be in the position of these people making the decisions, because they're limited by what they know as well, and how they can foresee what's going on. But yeah, you mentioned, you know, some of those funds that have been available from the Football Foundation. I know many clubs have there was the match day preparation fund that was £500 available for the Football Foundation for clubs, which was to get clubs up to more sanitising and more COVID secure. Then there was the club preparation fund, I believe, which was £10,000 for more sanitisation, additional stewards, anything to make sure that the clubs were COVID secure. But as you say, the clubs at steps 3 to 6 that maybe obtained those funds have been able to put some of it to use. But clubs at steps 1 and 2 that would also eligible for those grants have probably spent that funding, but haven't been able to put it to use. So it's almost as if there has been funding that's come down, but it's because we haven't known what's around the corner, or maybe if planned how things are going to pan out. Almost that money's not been wasted, but it could have maybe been a bit more targeted, and that's my concern with this additional funding. We almost need the finer points, and then rather than rush it out, I know clubs are desperate for the finance. There needs to be a strategy behind it, and I think that's what we've been lacking pretty much all year.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's difficult, isn't it, when sort of, as you say, I think everyone kind of who's running non-league football in sort of the very different roles and clubs and things like that is very difficult, because the answers to these questions aren't just sort of at the end of a phone. You can't sort of just quickly drop someone a text and find out the answer, can you? These are kind of big
Wikipedia's
big going
up to
on
it, yeah.
well above you've got a few contacts sort of in central government, I'm sure, you know, Prime Minister and things like that, but not all of us.
He never replies to my tweets anymore. I don't know,
he blocked you. He can't have blocked you.
I think I moved out of the area. I think that's it, and I'm no longer a part of the constituency. That's it, yeah. Now
But it doesn't kind of help when you sort of, like, you see here the other day, there's another headline, oh, they're looking at getting fans back in elite stadiums in December. Suddenly you think, well, kind of where did that come from? And it's kind of just sort of trying to really work out. And I think, to me, as much as, you know, I desperately want to be going back and watching football and in with crowds and step three to get back going before Christmas, which obviously the leagues have kind of put out these hoped and planned restart dates. But I just feel that and I could be completely wrong. I'm saying this, you know, with no kind of qualification or knowledge as such. The thing that worries me, just reading the situation, is Christmas is this big kind of thing on the horizon that everybody's talking about and everyone wants to know what they're going to do. And are they 2 weeks before or 3 weeks before Christmas going to just let everything go straight back to normal? I just don't know. And that's kind of the fear about trying to be sort of paint a gloomy.
I fully support you on that, Matt. My fear all along on the let's get fans back in campaign is that what we don't want is the non-league clubs to be seen and hung out to dry as a super spreader of COVID when we've just been through this lockdown. And it would be great to get lots of people back into grounds and have those family Boxing Day occasions where everybody comes together. I just don't think it's going to be possible. And you'd hope that someone maybe would take the decision away from non-league because everybody's going to be desperate to get as many people in the ground as possible. And it may be that isn't the best for non-league in the longer term.
Yeah, I think it's the same. You know, you look at pubs and things like that. Everyone sort of, they'll be sort of absolutely desperate. They're kind of on their knees as an industry and all these kind of things. But are they going to sort of open all those up before Christmas? Because what are people going to do? They're going to go straight down them. And so I don't sort of understand. But all this is kind of beyond my intellect and intelligence, I think. I don't start to understand the whole kind of thing anyway. I just, don't, the strategy all the way through this has just kind of just been a bit odd, isn't it? Mm. So, are they going to let people go straight back down and go to Christmas parties and all that kind of thing? It just seems to me that the likely thing they'll do is try and sort of shut it up as much as possible. And we know that clubhouses and bars is such a massive part of these non-league clubs that they're also missing out on. And there's been, even when step three and four, five and six clubs were allowed fans in, the restrictions that were being put in on some of them, serving food and people having to be sat down to have food and drink and all that kind of thing, was putting this extra weight of pressure on clubs and drying them up of kind of that sort of vital second spend in grounds. I mean, I went to games where, there'll be sort of, there were kind of sellouts on the gate as such for the maximum 400 people in, but the tea bars and the bars are kind of empty because partly maybe because people aren't sort of buying things when they're there because they're thinking, are they going to be open? Are they not? And then also there was these kind of extra restrictions that was kind of making it difficult for people. So, and that's kind of the thing that everyone is easy to, forget all that kind of extra stuff, and the things that people have in the week and the, lots of clubs would be hiring their parts of their clubhouses or their halls or whatever they've got out for functions during this very busy time. And that's also the sort of revenue that everyone's missing out on as well. It's kind of an impossible situation, really.
Yeah, and you mentioned about the leagues coming back, and they're saying about the coordination strategy. The leagues appear to be coming back or looking to come back at different times. I think the Isthmian League are suggesting maybe the 19th of December if lockdown finishes on the 2nd of December and they're allowed back. The other leagues at the step three and four suggesting the 12th. There's even suggestions that clubs can bring games forward if they can get the officials and organise it. And it is because everybody's so desperate. It's a bit like, I don't know, an Apple launch or something like that, isn't it? People are so desperate to get the product that we're almost queuing up outside our grounds and we don't know whether we're going to be allowed back in.
Yeah, I think everyone has, and we talk about football being a game of opinions, but everybody has an opinion about this as well. Mm. And everyone can have a different. Some managers you speak to think it's, they don't think it's madness to come back straight away as soon as they can. I think it's madness because of injuries, and they want to have training, they want to have a week, and they want to have friendlies and all this kind of thing. Speak to another manager, and they say, no, we've got to get straight back into it. It's not a problem. We've only been off a month. And you know, you've got all these kind of different views swirling around, and it is impossible, really, to just say, right, this is the one thing that everyone's going to do. So, I mean, I can see that they are saying, yeah, this is kind of the planned dates, but if you can arrange... and both clubs are happy to play before, and assuming lockdown's lifted, then that can be done and the fixtures can be sorted, and that's kind of fine. And it seems to me that is probably a sensible way of going, because instead of pinning hopes all on one or pinning everything on one time, it's just kind of getting the show back on the road again. Yeah. And that was kind of what it was before lockdown. We kind of all knew it was coming, and the league's just desperately trying to get through as many games as possible with this kind of knowing that this lockdown was on the horizon. And this is going to be the question as we go through this whole season, is what is going to happen? Could it come back for a week and 2 weeks and then all shut down? We'll be coming back for 2 months, and then, you know, there's just so many variables to the whole situation. We're going through the winter, but we can't, you can't say, oh, well, we could get to March, and as long as we get through March, then the rest of the season definitely going to finish, because when did the season finish last year? It finished in March, because that's when COVID, you know, all that really broke out. So there's just too many questions that are kind of way above everybody's, you know, control. And that is the, and I guess that's the frustration, because everyone wants that planning, that control, and that understanding of where we're heading. It's just not going to be quite there at the moment.
Yeah. And I think, those frustrations that you see, particularly on social media, from people and fans that are desperate to get to a game, and you say everybody's got an opinion. There's been plenty of opinions about even the suggested start dates this week. But then we've spoken to Elliot Durrell at Wrexham this week, and Peter Beadle at Barnet, and both clubs have had outbreaks within their own ranks of COVID-19, and that's because they've got probably better testing regimes in place at that level than we're going to have at steps 3, 4, 5, and 6 as well. And we are in the middle of a pandemic, and that's what people need to understand. So the future is there. We just don't know where or when.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? I mean, this season was always going to be a massive, massive challenge, and it's proven that way. And yeah, testing is an issue for every, you know, just for the country generally, I think, isn't it? It's getting that kind of not knowing what when the breakouts come from and all that kind of thing. And I think one thing to say is it's actually quite remarkable how many games of football have been played this season with kind of no sort of incident, really. And that's sort of testament to clubs and the people working, the volunteers who are working at these clubs, and the players and everything, that we kind of can forget how much football has been played. I mean, it feels at the moment that there's games going off all over the place in the National League, but at the moment, from kind of what sort of hear, is people kind of feeling that they can still get through the season at step 3 and 6, and that's kind of that's the big thing, is trying to desperately get the season played out in full, because you don't want to be going down these other potential avenues.
It's certainly going to be a season that people remember, and
we'll laugh about it one day. Well, maybe not laugh, but it's going to be one of those seasons that we're just never ever gonna forget. This whole period, it's just incredible. It's just when you sort of think back, it's just like the oddest situation, you know, that a lot of us will come across in our whole lifetimes, generally.
Yeah, even the original lockdown back in March seems so far away. It's like a completely different box set. I don't know about a different series. It's a different season. It's just very, very strange. But obviously the non-league paper continues week in, week out. You've got some National League games to report on this week, but what else can we expect to read about in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, and you say lots of National League games still going on. We've got the, as you said about earlier, Elliot Durrell, the news at Wrexham of this of the fans taken over by these two sort of, I don't know if they're vaguely well known actors. I'm not too sure if you've seen many of their films, Tim. But
I have to say I'm not a big fan. But I mean, if they want to invite me to be on the remake of the film, then, you know, I'm sure you and I can do a little phone in chat or something, just a little sideway in their next Hollywood movie.
Yeah, I'm always available. It's, talk to my agent and we'll okay.
Even editors of non-league papers in the non-league game now have agents. I mean, what's non-league come to?
That's my missus. I'm told. So we've got sort of reaction to that. Speaking to sort of Dean Keats and kind of this sort of remarkable, which if a story kind of summed up 2020, then it would be two megastar sort of actors taking over a National League club, and it's just kind of quite a crazy one. I remember sort of seeing it a few weeks ago when the club kind of sent something out saying that these were the two, Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, were these two sort of interested business. You sort of think, like, really, is this sort of like a sort of checking everywhere, kind of make sure that it's kind of not being wound up?
Not a spoof. And it shows how big that news is as well. I also saw a picture. Was it John Cleese and Jason Watkins? So two of comedy actors or well-known people in British comedy wearing Wrexham shirts, and it only made the local paper, I believe, because they weren't big enough stars.
Yeah, it's just crazy, and they're sort of the trailer that they put, or the I say trailer because they're talking about the sort of the video they put out was, I think it's been seen more than a million times, isn't it?
So Five million, I believe.
Yeah. It's been a long week, isn't it? Sort of, that was a long time ago that came out. But so we've got some stuff with that, and we've spoken to Steve Chettle at Baseford kind of about what they're trying to do down there, and they're sort of flying. I think they won 5 league games and won in the trophy, six wins on the spin before lockdown, and kind of talking to Steve Chettle about Baseford and their kind of ambitions, and they sort of the youth academy that they've got down there, which is kind of Callum Chettle, Steve's son, and Josh Law, former Alfreton player, and who's been around non-league a bit, sort of kind of in their coaching system. I spoke to Mark Stimpson, Hornchurch manager, been kind of quite vocal about the five subs. He kind of said last week that he thinks it's the five substitute rule that's kind of across Europe should be introduced into non-league football because of the for health and safety and well-being of players. And that's kind of moved on this week where the EFL are going to allow their clubs to use, or they've all voted for, five subs from this weekend, actually, so it's coming in quite quickly, isn't it? Plenty in there. Lots of some FA Cup previews, because that's already coming around again, this the second round, unbelievably, next week. So we're going to Solihull Moors, and got a piece of Chorley, and Kingsland, I think, are playing next Saturday as well. So it's just lots going on, lots to get in there. We've got Adam Virgo column as well, kind of overlooking the start of the National League season and kind of his views and what he kind of makes of the Wrexham takeover as well. So it's all interesting stuff and lots in there on Sunday.
It's plenty going on in non-league, really, and you just need to go to the right places. So make sure you pick up your non-league paper on Sunday. Matt, as ever, always a pleasure to talk to you, and have an exciting weekend, and we'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, Tim. Take care.
That's it then for this week. Thank you to Dave Anderson for joining me. Thank you to Elliot and Peter, our guests as well. Very insightful and gives us an understanding as well of what it's like to be a player and a manager in the current climate that is allowed to play football. But then there's obviously the other COVID measures, the implications of when a teammate picks up COVID as well, and the postponements. And I just think it shows how hard the people who are involved in non-league football are working, both those that are playing games at the moment, playing games on a weekly basis, and those that are gearing up to get back playing again, and on whatever focus that means. The world is strange. Non-league has always been strange, and maybe it's stranger still. Who knows? One quick mention, do check out Football Flow, Fundamental Learning on Wellbeing on Facebook. They've launched their Facebook site this week. It's Dominic Sterling and Dean Hooper, they made a friendship when they played for Aldershot. Both had great careers in non-league and the Football League as well with Dean, and both have had their own adversities with mental health, and I know they've been working very hard in recent months, particularly over lockdown, to get this new the system and support network, I guess, as well with Football Flow. And hopefully we'll have Dean on in the coming weeks to tell us more about it. But do check out their Facebook page, that's Football Flow, and hopefully we'll have Dean on soon to tell us more about it. Thank you to everybody for listening as well, wherever that may be. Do let people know that we're still out here, we're still broadcasting for your pleasure, and hopefully getting some different and insightful interviews, a few more lined up in the coming weeks as well. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anderson's there at DaveAnderson78, myself at Tim Fuel. Plus, of course, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Take a look there too for the Non-League Gaffer Tapes. We'll be back very soon. Dave's got a couple of things lined up as soon as we can get those in the bag. Stay alert, stay safe. Thank you and goodbye.
J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.